Blog Talk Radio.
Takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
And if I may say that the Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
All praises for Father God and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Doc Stanley, Sports and Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Radio Network. I'm just thinking here how blessed I am, what I can comprehend, how comfortable it is always coming here and doing this show for you, with you. 646-200-0373. You want to join me? Dusty should be with me. Then I'll get Juneberg in here too. Gilberto Ortiz. Gilberto TKO Ortiz. Technically knowledgeable, outstanding in the world of sports. That's his new nickname. Gilberto TKO. Technical, knowledgeable, and outstanding. Adrian Bronafort this weekend. One. Some time away from the sweet science, the squared circle. Happy birthday to you, Dr. J. Bobby C., my late cousin, Audrey. Lord, 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 the moments that touch my heart. That song, they can't take that away from me. 103 West 127th Street in Harlem. And that was a piece of heaven on earth. And Vanetta. Dempsey, Eleanor, Peachy, and Bootsy, Mama Teensy, Cousin Junie, Cousin Milton, Cousin Audrey, Punch was her nickname, Green and Ricky, man, they were Christmas present by themselves, just being around them, a Christmas present by themselves. They had the only Christmas tree I can remember. There were a couple that had angel hair, that was big back in the days. And they always say, hey, don't let the angel get on you, scratch you. They always had an angel, a tree, right now, an angel on it. And depending on who the baby was, they had a present for the baby. James, then later Teresa, because me and Helen went back to back. So And that was it, man. That was it. Doc Stanley Sports at Block Talk Radio and Trust the Governor. Other birthdays this month, too. I heard Stevie Wonder is leaving the country. Even a couple occasions, too. The picture. Preserving. Celebrates his birthday today. Bobby C. Colleagues and the unpredictable forces. Sports in New York City, and it makes him worldwide. Remember my cousin Audrey? Student Bert Flowers. One of the broadcast alumni of ours. Most a lot of birthdays. A few outstanding people. I think she'll be joining us. Jonah came back. Had to get Junebug to join us too. Moment or two. PKL, technically. Algebra, outstanding. Science. I got my board here, too. Happy birthday to D, Dr. J, and Bobby C. Bert Flowers, too. Kareem over in J. Dr. Cross. Spoke to the great Dr. Gooden last night about that. Happy birthday to Stu, Professor William Madison Calhoun Jr., who was part of the video documentary that did so. When it came back, it's the Dr. Knight like back on the SAR FM radio day. Being at my best may be viewed by others being the best. That's words of wisdom. A good thing can never be bad. Great line by Mae West. You can never get too much of a good thing. I got to find that quote exactly from her, man. She had a quote. No, too much of a good thing is wonderful. That's the line. Too much of a good thing is wonderful. Yeah. When I'm good, I'm good. And when I'm bad, I'm better. Sam Cooke opens up for us. And one of my favorite songs. I have two of them, you know, back to back. I almost touched one. I see if you got this for me. But Sam Cooke.
Oh, that was a woman. In the Bible days, she had been sick so very long. But she heard my Jesus was passing by, so she joined the gathering throng. And while she was pushing her way through, someone asked her, "What are you trying to do?" She said, "If I could just touch the hem of his garment, I know I'll be made whole." She cried, "Oh, no more to spare. The doctors, they done all they could, but their medicine would do no good. When she touched him, the Savior didn't see, but still he turned around and cried, 'Somebody touch me.' She said, 'It was I who just want to touch the hem of your garment. I know I'll be made whole right now.'" She stood there crying, "Oh, oh, 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 Lord. And oh, 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 said, "If I could just touch the hem of your garment, I know I'll be made whole right now."
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
Nets 5-0 on their West Coast trip. Been a while since they've done that. I don't know if they've ever done it. I've been checking that, but I want to salute them. There's a play I had this to me earlier, and, you know, just when I went on the air, I'm looking for it. Of course, now that I'm looking for it, it's not popping up. But we had an NBA player last night and a losing course for the Cavaliers. Shot 11 for 11 from the field. He's the first player to shoot perfect from the field since Wilton Chamberlain. Well, you know, it's remarkable how Chamberlain is not mentioned as the greatest player of all time. And a lot of it has to do. I had an article from Reggie Jackson today, too, and Dusty can join me on that. He's going to be here in a minute. We are going to also, as we always do, open up. We're hoping to get June for a minute, too. We'll open up with Sam Cook. Let's get to the prayer. And I want to, because if we get June to join us, and also open up with. I heard Stevie Wonder's leaving the country. Going to Guyana. Ghana. Leaving the country. They said the second time he's contemplated. We're playing this is happy birthday to Dr. J. Julius Winfield Irving Jr. Birthday is today. Bobby C., our man here, and one of the top sportscasters and personalities and human beings. New York City makes him the best in the world. Happy birthday to him. Bird Flowers! Another. We had Bird on the show in a long time. Happy birthday to him. Remember, he said something I'll never forget. He said, so, but I'm concerned, Dr. J would have told Michael Jordan a brand new asshole. My late cousin Audrey, you remember her? Hello, the birthday just month, too. But today, Dr. J, Bobby C., my beloved cousin, Audrey. Dr. Stanley, Sports of the Block Talk Radio and Trust and Government Network. What we're going to do now, we're going to go into prayer. And then, let's see, talk a little bit. Boxing, Drona came back. And a couple other things, too. Dr. Stanley, Sports of the Block Talk Radio and Trust and Government Network. Without further ado, that today. You know what? That's not one. That's going to be a little. Monday's blessed. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Like it's never understood. Here we go. Time to prayer. Monday blessings. Have a blessed week. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him. Check thy paths. Monday blessings. Let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is, fruit of our lips. Giving thanks for his name. Do not forget to do good and to share. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. My man John sent me a real nice one. I'm going to do that later. Always. My sister and former sister-in-law, Ingrid always sends me a heart of Helen. Love it. Helen is that she always sends me some every morning. Everybody gets those prayers at Helen's. Oh, Helen already got that to me. Dear Lord, prayer of the day is such a wonderful blessing for me. My loved ones today, heal our family, our community, country, and the whole world. This pandemic. Us, the love. Wasn't there Block Talk Radio and Trust and Government? That was from my Camilla Mel and Terry Curtis and Ingrid. Doc Stanley, Sports in the Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network. And, but Dusty, Drona came back. Your thoughts? How do you look?
Well, you know, like I've told you, it seems like a repeat show, but like I've said, to me, he was a firebrand. Winning four consecutive world titles in four different divisions, fast, although a Mayweather copycat, idolizer, let's put it that way, not copycat, idolizer. When he ran into Maidana, what happened to him?
You know, Dusty, you know, you told me that last night.
Yeah.
And I had something on my I'm on WhatsApp, and there was I think it was my man Max. Max sent this to me, and you know, I'm looking at it, and what it was the no, it wasn't the McDonough fight. Felix, which you should have in the super too, a former super sent it to me, because Felix always is one of those guys that always, you know, when you need the base hit, he comes through. And it was when show-offs get put in their place. And that was the fight against Broner and McDonough. I said, wow. I said, Dusty just talked about this fight last night. And Bruce Lee said, showing off is the fool idea of glory. Showing off is the fool's idea of glory. And I said, man, Dusty was telling me about this fight. And I said, wow. And it was great because we're getting ready to go on the air. He was never the same fighter after that fight. And he was a good little fight at one time, though.
Yeah, the talent is still there. But the confidence, and he become gun-shy. After the Maidana fight, for every one punch, he would get hit 10. You know what I'm saying? You know, he did win some fights, but then the big ones, the Pacquiao's, I believe, what was it, Danny Garcia? No,
you're talking about, because we were at that fight. We were at that fight.
Right.
Man, I miss those days, sitting up there, man, listening to you, you know, with your eagle eyes. Now, he's got to work most of the body, you know, and me and Lady A and y'all. Yeah, one of the greatest shows of my life, by the grace of God, is sitting there with y'all, man, and just listening to you and Lady. Yeah, one of the best nights we ever had was the Asher Gordon fight.
That little sports in depth Bob Uecker section.
Listen, but what is the wisdom? The night where we had everybody there, me, you, Lady A, and June, Austin Trout against Miguel Cotto.
Exactly. And the thing
and
is,
they should have sent a camera crew up there to listen to y'all. And it's remarkable because it's through others I am somebody. And what y'all bring to this table, man, is I always said, you know, I used to think y'all were the best, but now I know y'all are the absolute best. And also, Dusty, it's the intellect that y'all bring too, you know. And I say, you know, and with the in-depth knowledge and diverse intellect of Doc's iconic posse, sports in depth is to the world in depth. I mean, you know, people don't understand. You people are intellectuals too, college grads. I mean, you were the top fireman and a model at the same time. I still got the picture, baby. I still got the picture. You ought to, I got it now. You ain't getting it back. You know what I mean? Lady A, Professor Junebug. You know, it's just remarkable to me how blessed I am, you know, through y'all, man. There's some talk. We did Crawford and Spence. June was saying that. I'm going to get June to join us, too. Spence was doing a 60-40. Crawford won at 50-50. And now, I believe, if I'm correct, Dusty, haven't they taken the Pacquiao's title away from him, too?
Well, there's talk about Pacquiao being idle and not doing the mandatories, and he, of course, he's up in the Philippines playing his politics. It's a shame that they will punish the man, you know, and take away his title. I mean, first of all, I'm very sure I told you. I said, why Danny Garcia go after Spence when he could have gone after Pacquiao? Oh, he's part of the Over the Hill gang, got himself a title. So he did
Pacquiao didn't want him, you bring him tremendous points because Pacquiao's going to get paid anyway. If he fights me or you, he's going to get paid.
Yeah, either way, whether he wanted it or not, this, that, and the other, I would have opted. But then like I was telling you all along, that Danny Garcia, he may have felt Spence had not recovered, like I kept telling you, from the car accident, which I believe.
And not only that, Dusty, if he beats Spence, he goes to Pacquiao with a title and more of a
exactly.
a bargaining chip. It elevates the price of money he can get.
Right. He would walk after go after Pacquiao with three titles, you know.
Yeah.
Because Crawford has won. So the fact of the matter is, but now that he would say, hey, this is my second straight pay per view because I beat Spence pay per view, and now
right.
I have Pacquiao pay per view, and then for all the marbles, I got a third pay per view with Crawford. But it didn't happen. But the fact of the matter is that if I don't see why Spencer's saying 60-40 split, he's doing a Mayweather with Pacquiao. 60-40 split because I'm the man. No, you're not. I saw you get blasted by Sean Porter. So don't tell me that you're the man. And you fought a gun shy. And this is, I told you this before, an inept, not improved, gun-shy Danny Garcia. You know,
yeah,
and,
but that's what my thinking is this. If you're Crawford, 60-40, take the 60-40. I mean, if you know you're good. See, and I always say, this is my thing that always is this. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad wanted Marvin Johnson. He told Marvin, whatever you want, baby. And he gave me, he fought him in his hometown. See, DK, when Trinidad fought De La Hoya, I see DK now, he said, hey, I gave Aaron everything he wanted. But I know
my man
can beat his
right.
man, but I told Bob, if this is a good deal, we're going to flip the switch with my man Woods. 60-40. Take the 60.
Yeah.
You want him in the ring. Yes. I never forget the night that Julio Cesar Chavez lost for the first time. They said it was the second time. But Frankie the Surgeon Randall beat him. We're in the dressing room. There is the great Ray Leonard. And Ray said something I'll never forget. He said, you know, sometimes it's not about the money. It's about being the champion. Get him in the
right.
ring. 60-40. Okay, you're going to get 40. So, okay, that's less taxes you got to pay. If you and let's look at it. Spence has fought a better quality group of fighters than what Crawford's fought. I mean, 60-40.
Well,
60-40. You know, come on, man. You might think, Dusty, come on. I want to fight you. I'm not worried about it. You know, I mean, Crawford, no, nobody's running out to see Crawford. Crawford, you know, Crawford's no Pacquiao, Mayweather, Duran, Leonard, Ali, people, Frazier. Now, that rushing out to see him. I mean, I think this Dusty 60-40. Now, and then
look, the
no, then Smith said, okay, if you don't want 60-40, do 70. If Dusty, I don't see what you're saying. If you want to fight 60, like Ray Leonard, she says, hey, sometimes it's not about the money. It's about being the champion. And the greatest example I've ever had of that is Eddie Mustafa. Eddie gave Marvin Johnson the money, the ring. He fought him in his hometown. All I wanted in the ring. Once I got, hey, I'll settle this. Once I get him in the ring, I got it. Hey, if Crawford, you know, if you think you can be, I mean, I got to question Crawford too. You're 60-40. Hey, you know what? If you want to fight him, fight him. Crawford, I mean, Spencer's one of the better quality fighters, and Spencer's got the better name. Now, it ain't that much bigger, but it's bigger.
Yeah, but
only the elite, like you. Only the elite, like you. And you wanted to elite. You, Lady, only y'all know his ability and his skills.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got, and Bob Ram has and you know that Dusty has the propensity to shelter his fighters.
No, well, you know, Bob Arum can do whatever he wants, but what I'm saying to you, from the ring perspective, you know, I'm a champ, and you're a champ. All right, you got three titles, and I got one title. We're both undefeated. Why should I take less money? Because you're Spence? I would
do it. Dusty, you just said it. You got three titles. You got one.
Right. But
you got three titles. Let's flip the switch. You're the guy with the three titles. I'm the guy with one. That's what you're telling me. You're telling me I got three, you got one, 60-40. That's what you're telling me. And for whatever reason, it's true. It's true.
Well,
I mean, my thing
is,
I got a question, Dusty. Maybe Crawford think he can't win the fight.
Well,
you know, because
there's a lot of intangibles involving this thing. First of all, you got to deal. You got to deal with the fact that Crawford is a Bob Arum. One. Number two.
Hey Dusty, that's a hell of a deal, Mike.
right. But then you got to deal with the fact that there's a lot of ego involved, man. You know.
And I understand
that. Why should I? No. Listen to me. Come on. Listen to me.
I'm listening.
It was parity between the French Mayweather and Pacquiao fight, 40-40. Now all of a sudden, Mayweather comes up with, well, he's on steroids and all that nonsense. I wouldn't fight him until he takes a decision. All that rigmarole. But when he finally, and this is the point, that when he finally, when Pacquiao finally accepted the fight, mm-hmm. because he was damaged goods. Mayweather was not damaged goods. You see? So, and 60-40 was better, and guess what happened? I mean, poor Pacquiao only got about 100 mil for 60-40.
Exactly. How much?
100 mil or 110, but Mayweather walked off with over 300 mil. So the mm-hmm. fact of the matter is that at that time, it was a justified negotiation because Pacquiao had hit the skids. Mayweather was still top dog, and he was lucky that Pacquiao accepted it because Showtime was paying Mayweather 25-30 mil to fight tomato cans. So he had to get a marquee fighter.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. But now you're dealing with two dudes who are saying, whoa, okay, so he got three titles. I won about four or five titles. I cleared up the 140s. I cleared up the 135s. And I got one welterweight fight title. But I have seven other titles. So, I mean, I'm not going to take I'm a marquee fighter just like you. You, Errol Spence, you didn't win different weight titles. You only won the welterweight title. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Hold on, you got a minute?
No, I can't right now.
Okay.
Hey,
yes, June. I was trying to get June to join us there, Dust.
Yeah. Now, Crawford says, hey, I dominated the 140. I took over the 35. Now, I got the 47, but you only fought at one level, 147. Okay? Boom. And then you fought Mikey Garcia, a lightweight, and beat the crap out of him, but that was no challenge. So you're telling me that because you have the three titles and I have one welterweight title, but look at my history. Undefeated, and I
won four. That's it. They're both undefeated. He's not undefeated by himself. They're both undefeated. We're fighting welterweight.
Well, no,
you want to fight for the welterweight title. You got one welterweight title. I got three. But it's 60-40 if you want to fight. And Jesse, you got the heart of a champion. You come from back of the day. Hey, man, let's do this. Let's do this. It ain't about the money. Let's do this. That's
money.
What I'm saying. If it's about the money, then there's something wrong. Because, I mean, 60-40, biggest payday of your career. And how many guys, Dusty, blew the biggest payday of their career? Mike Rosman takes a tune-up against Jackie Lopez and loses. And doesn't fight Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. Joe Frazier has a chance to make more money fighting Ali a second time. He takes a tune-up against George Foreman and gets tuned up.
He gets killed.
Hey. Take the money, Dusty.
But you don't seem to understand, digest what I'm telling you, man. Spence.
Dusty, I understand what you're saying.
No,
do you understand
no,
what
no,
I'm
no,
saying?
No,
60-40,
no,
let's
yes,
do this.
Do. No,
my thing is, if you want to fight, fight. Yeah, money has its place. But I'm just going by what Ray Leonard said. Sometimes it's not
Ray
about
Leonard,
the money. It's about being
Ray
the champion.
Yeah, well, to me, Ray Leonard's full of shit. Bullshit. Because
you sound like Harold. You know when I told Harold that he said the same thing.
Yeah, it's nonsense, man. Because if it's about the money, if it's not about the money, what the hell are you doing in this business? I'll kill you. Come on. You're here to get as much money as you can. Crawford.
Yeah, Dusty, hold on a second. I saw something. I thought about you right away. Henry Homicide Hank Armstrong. Look at his record, Dusty. 151-22, nine draws, and 100 knockouts.
Exactly.
Do you put him in your top five of the best pound-for-pound fighters ever?
Look, that man is in the glory level, of course. He's a man who, as a lightweight, fought a middleweight.
and they said he actually won the fight, and they took it from him.
He beat Seferino Garcia. He slapped the crap out of him, and yet they took it away from him. And the scuttlebutt was that they didn't want him to win a third title or some shit like that. That's bullshit.
Yeah, fourth title.
Mm-hmm. Fourth title. But that's ridiculous. But you're not in there, man, because you love the sport. Okay, beat the crap out, cut my eye, break my nose. No, I have to have a cushion to fall back on after all these injuries, man. Oh, I made my money. And you know, this is why these guys, like Canelo, let's throw Canelo in there, side with Eddie Hearns. Eddie Hearns is guaranteeing him $30 million a fight. Mayweather signed with Showtime and Espinoza for 6 pay-per-view fights, and there was a $25-26 million apiece. You see, and it's to make them. It's about the money. Leonard talks a lot of crap, but it's not a. It is about the money. Come on.
I got a question for you too.
Let me tell you. Let me just make this point. He to eliminate trainers and managers and promoters. Him and his boy Mark Trainer formed the Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, and they kept the money themselves. So it's not about the money.
That's it. You know what? You come right under the money. That's it. Somebody said something today to me, and I said, I got to tell you. Sonny Liston, was he underrated, Dusty?
Sonny Liston? Underrated. You know, he really – okay, I'll tell you my synopsis. Sonny Liston was never a great heavyweight.
Hmm.
Sonny Liston was just a heavy-handed – ex-con club fighter. But he had enough boxing skills and strength to nullify the dudes that he fought. But when we ran into float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, he
Cassius Clay.
He could not do anything. Did you see that fight? If I've seen it 20 times, I've seen it 100 times.
You know what, Dusty? It was funny. My first time in Brazil, and I'm going to my room, and because I listened on radio to that fight, February 1964, I'm in Brazil. What, 20 years later? 50 years later? And I'm cutting on the TV, and there it is. And Desilio Tomasio Jr., international promoter, told me that the first free fight they got in Brazil was Ali and Foreman, but I'm saying looking at that fight, and it was heck of a fight. That wow, I got a chance to finally see it. Go ahead, Dust.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that here, from the you saw a heavyweight Sugar Ray Robinson, man, against a bull who was just going and clubbing flat footed and throwing bombs that he would catch the slower heavyweight fighters, you know, and all them dudes and hurt them. Patterson, who the hell was Patterson? Patterson was only really a light heavyweight or a super middleweight, but he became a heavyweight.
You know, Dusty, the Sports Net Block Talk Radio on the Trusted Guard Network. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you hear things here you never heard before now. Okay, now you don't know. When Floyd Patterson won his gold medal in the Olympics, he won his gold medal, as Dusty's telling you, as a middleweight.
Exactly. Super middleweight or whatever the hell they call it. But he saw... Just like they did with Evander Holyfield, Luduva, they saw the bigger purses, the bigger money in the heavyweights. You know, but the difference being that you had a better, classy, stronger dude in Holyfield than you saw in Floyd Patterson. Okay, his biggest claim to fame, Patterson, was with knocking out Ingemar Johansson, who was never the same after that. But I mean, come on. He didn't belong in there, but and when he fought, this is why Casamaro did not want him to fight Liston. But he said, "Well, I'm a champ, and he deserves the shot." It was the father beating his unruly son. I mean, everything he threw at Patterson was a bouncy bounce ball. Patterson was no match for this guy, but that's the way it is. So what I'm saying to you is that Liston was the type of dude that if he caught you, what was that? Was it Satterfield? Or there was another heavyweight that, oh, my God. The guy that got shot by state police and he survived the shooting. God. Anyway, heavyweight. This guy I knew was going to destroy Liston. He didn't. he stood there and listened through one of them sledgehammer right hands, and boom, fight's over. That's, you know, if you let listen hit you and bounce around and don't bounce around like Muhammad Ali, he'll kill you. And I remember my boy, Julius Griffin, one of the toughest heavyweights in my gym, PAL, Golden Glove, Intercity. Man, he was a sure fight to win the gold medal in the Intercity Championship. They don't have that anymore. Anyway.
What was the name of it, Desi?
The Intercity Championships. So
wow.
One year we went to Chicago and fought the Western champs. We were the Eastern champs. And then the following year, the Western champs would come to New York, and we fight at Madison Square Garden. And so that year they went to Chicago. And he is a heavyweight. He fought a dude who had just come out of prison, Sonny Liston. And he says, and he got beat. He got beat bad. If it hadn't been for the fact that he was strong and this, that, and the other, and he grabbed on and ate, chewed up the clock, he got beat bad. He says, even his jabs were like a sledgehammer in my face. I hit
wow.
the dude. I hit the dude. It was like hitting a brick wall. My hands were hurting. I'm not trying to make a joke of it. I'm telling you.
And when
we went into the clinch, oh my God, it was like an octopus that I couldn't pull my hands free for this guy. And Sonny Liston against my boy, Julius Griffin, and he got pounded. This guy's an animal. Right after that, I think after he won the Intercity, he beat Julius Griffin. He turned pro. And that's when he went on his undefeated records and all that nonsense. And when did he become heavyweight champion? I don't even remember. But the fact is that he fought a dude who outsmarted him, out-Sugar Ray Robinson him, and who also hurt him. Nobody hurt Liston as much as Muhammad Ali hurt him. And Muhammad Ali hit him with that right hand. Muhammad was not a real knockout puncher, but he hit hard enough to hurt you. And when he hit Liston with that right hand and his left eye, and he pounded and hit him with three or four unanswered punches, Liston quit. Liston knew, shit, I can't beat the son of a bitch. You know, so he was, well, his shoulder was hurt, this, that, and the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was being embarrassed. That to me, I'm laughing because the way I make combinations. That to me was the first no mas fight before the.
You know what, that's remarkable. That and ladies and gentlemen, you know, that's a thought, Dusty, that a lot of people have never entertained, and you just, you know, it's remarkable. That's been so right in front of you, and you're so busy looking for it that you look right past it.
Yep, and people, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Liston was good with the right opponents, man. But when he slapped around, when he got a dude like, see, Muhammad Ali was insane with confidence. He knew within himself. He hypnotized himself or psyched himself. Nobody could beat me. I'm too good. I'm too pretty to get hit. And like I told you many times before, he did everything wrong, but it came out right.
You know, it's funny you said that, because I was looking.
That was,
I remember, talking to, must be a Latin thing too with you guys. Jose Torres said the same thing. He said, everything that you tell somebody not to do, Ali did in the ring.
Ali did it and was successful.
Yeah, he did everything
successful.
You tell somebody not to do in the ring, Ali did.
It was successful. And, you know, and I told a guy one time, I don't know if I think I had to have told you or something, that if there was a match between an Ali who beat Liston and a young Joe Louis, I would have to put my money on Ali, because this dude was too smart, too slick, too fast to get hit, even though to me Joe Louis was a king of the ring. But I would question whether Joe Louis could have beaten him. Okay.
You know what? And John Condon, John Francis Xavier Condon, The man who, like Miles Davis told Ray Robinson, it's time to stop, told Ali and my godfather, Demi's godfather, too. And he said, he said what you said. He said, Ali would have been just too smart and too quick for Joe.
No, too smart, the fast, too fast.
Yeah.
That jab would have been in his face all night. And then being, see, heavyweights, I grew up with heavyweights that were plotters. These guys were flat-footed all the time. The only time he saw a little dancing sucker was Max Baer, maybe. Who was the other guy? The Cinderella Man. It was a boxer.
Braddock.
Braddock. Jimmy Braddock. But I forgot what other guy. Maybe Jim Corbett watching the old fights. He was a jabber. And look what he did to John R. Sullivan. So,
yeah.
You know. But most heavyweights are plotters, flat-footed and glide and glide and glide. Joe Louis was a plotter, but he still had boxing skills. His trailing leg was always on the ball of his feet. His lead leg, the left leg, was always, and his jab was tremendous. He can box, but he could not. Outboxed to me, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was too fast. First of all, Lewis had weak temples. That's what Max Schmeling would knocked him out. And Muhammad Ali could throw that right hand over that low swinging jab and hurt him. So that's what I'm saying. That I hate to say this about Joe Lewis, but if it was too, you know, I would feel that Muhammad Ali could have beaten him. But then again, we'll never know.
Bill Gallo, in an interview I did, said, you know, that Joe told Ali one time, said, you know, I had my Bum of the Month club, and you'd have been in it.
Yeah, Bum of the Month, exactly. And because he fought Tommy Muriello and Nick Mafiosi, and he fought two-ton Tony Galento, Gus Lesnar. Who are these guys? Plotters. They were just tall beanbags that he could knock out, you know, Lee Savoie, you know, guys like that. And, of course, he lost to Schmeling because Schmeling saw something, and he studied him. And what it was that every time Lewis threw his jab, he brought it back low. So he would pull back and throw his right hand right over a low jab. But then again, of course, Joe Lewis came in that first round, 259 of the first round, and destroyed Max Schmeling. All right. But the fact of the matter is that fighters who can box, fighters who have good jabs, to me, have an advantage. I just saw this guy, Easter Jr., forgot his name, the lightweight, Friday or Saturday. This man... former lightweight champ. He fought a tremendous fight sitting on the jab all night and threw combos and moved. I said, damn, Easter. And Danny Garcia, Mikey Garcia, beat the crap out of him. But he changed. See? So what I'm saying to you with the overall picture is the fact that Liston really was just a plotter who was successful because in his style, he met the guys who were right for him until he met Muhammad Ali.
Tailor-made.
Yeah.
Dusty, so he had that great line, and I know a lot of people they say you ought to copyright it. He had his provided tomato cans.
He had all his tomato cans, and I'm telling you, he hit them guys because the guy is one of these heavy-handed dudes that whenever he hits you on your arms, your elbow, your shoulder, he'll fracture your shoulders. The guy's hands are so big, you know. But he didn't have to improve because that's how tough he was, and his jab was pretty decent. And once it connected, he hurt you. But you know, I was not surprised. I mean, well. I was surprised and delightfully surprised to see that Ali was able to solve him and fight him the way he could not control the ring. from the first round on, I saw a Muhammad Ali movie. I said, that's the right strategy. I didn't realize he was going to be so successful. But when he hit, listen, 6, 7, 8 unanswered punches, and he had the jab stuck in his face, I said, holy crap, I can't believe this. But that's the way it is. You know, and Broner, well, you know, like I said, he fought this Puerto Rican dude. To me, he lost, but they gave him a present. In a way, compassionately, I'm glad, in a sense, that they gave him a present because maybe he'll get himself together. You know, he was out of the ring for 2 years. He was weighing 190. He was weighing 198 pounds. I mean, in and out of jail, pain. I mean, this guy was a total misfit. He said, "Now I got myself together. I'm 31. Blah 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 blah." But you know, he fought and he did well. He hurt the guy, busted the guy's face. But to me, the guy scored more punches at him than he did because he's still gun shy. I mean, the Maidana demon is still on his shoulders, man. Monkey on his back, you know. But now he says he wants a title shot. Now he wants this. I mean, 147 is good for him, but he'll run into what? Spence, Crawford, Danny Garcia,
and also the football player masquerading as a boxer.
Oh, Sean Porter.
Yeah, yeah.
The safety who's not making money as a boxer. Yeah.
Hey, Dusty. He's a safety who. It's not to get safe in the ring with.
Exactly. That was good. That was a good one. That was a good analogy.
Yeah. Hold on, Doc. Calvin Gaye's going to say something for us before we run. Hold on, baby. Calvin Gaye has this to say before Doc and Dusty go on our way. SARFM. I think about that, Dusty. SARFM radio, baby.
Yeah, those are the days.
Man, I remember we being there fixing that machine. And man, all they had to do was lock us in that room, give us some food and water, and we'd never come out.
That's right. You talk all that nonsense, all that radio nonsense.
Ahead of time, man. Africa. We were number one radio station in Africa.
People
and then you were.
People loved it. People
the big
it.
Reasons, baby. And hey, you're the only guy in the world, man. You playing. And let's. Oh, hey. In memory of Johnny Pacheco, too, and his passing.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You
that's
were the only guy.
Last week. Yeah.
You the only guy spreading salsa music all through Africa. I mean, Gay has this to say before we go on our way. Mr. Gay, please now.
I just want
to
ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time.
When the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try
to save a world?
To save a world
that's destined to die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
To blame.
We can't stop
when
living.
We can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies.
Before we close, and you were one of the top. Before we close, you were one of the top MCs in history of Latin music. Can you just talk a couple of minutes about the input and the profound effect that Johnny Pacheco had on music, Latin music? I remember he was down at the Village Gate one night, man. And you remember they said the Village Gate, South of East Jazz. He was down there one night, and was good to me. And Hector Camacho was there, man. But now everybody's talking boxing, and Johnny told a very funny story. He said, "You know, I used to box one." He says, "Man, I boxed this guy, man. He said, everything I couldn't do nothing with this guy." So my friend said, meet Johnny. Oh, look at Johnny. Real quick. Next week, we're going to get a guy, same size, your same age, the same weight. Johnny, give it another week. Give it another week." So he said he's trading everything, and you know, he's coming up the ropes, goes to the ropes, looks across the ring, Dusty. He said it was the same guy. He said, "Cut the gloves off. I'm done."
Same guy. No,
Johnny, he said it was the same guy. You know, he said, "You told Johnny, no, Johnny, don't quit, man. You said, Johnny, we go. Hey, Johnny, look, next week we're gonna get a guy your same size, your same age, your same weight. We get the right guy for you, Johnny." He said, "Look across the ring, Dusty. It was the same guy." Dusty, same guy. Your thoughts on Johnny Pacheco, please.
Well, the only thing I hate to use the word fail, but It was when he organized the Fine All Stars. That was big time. I never got a shot to MC, you know, but I MC'd the other shots. But Pacheco came here from the Dominican Republic at 11, was raised in the Bronx, and his father and mother were musicians, so he had that empathy for music all the time, especially the flute. And he did a lot of stuff he created. And he started when that was the era of La Charanga, the Cuban style music. And he formed his own group, El Tumbao. And that's how he got, you know, his claim to fame. And Eli Romero was a singer. And he watched on from there. And he was one of the organizers or owners of that great label, Fania All Stars. He started a record label with Jerry Masucci, a retired NYPD cop, and they formed a where they contracted all the top musicians in the world, which I MC quite a few. And the fact of the matter is that the man was an institution. Yeah, that's the best way I can describe it. He was a musical institution. And he also was funding a school for kids for music who wanted to learn music, there was another endowment that he started. There's a school named, oh my God, I forgot where it is, a school that's named after him. And of course, he collaborated with Puente and Celia Cruz and Willie Colon. Oh my God, you name it, he had it, you know. And he was just a tremendous. And the sad thing is that I, in my travel days when I used to travel a lot, well, before the pandemic, I never missed a concert. I mean, we don't have nightclubs anymore, so I got to get to a concert and sit down there and relive my memory. So the last time I saw him was at the Lehman College for Performing Arts in the Bronx, Bedford Park, and standing room only. But you can tell the guy was, he was always frail. But you can tell he can hardly walk, hardly sing, and he had to be carrying.
Yeah, I remember that. But what I remember too, and it hit me about 4 or 5 years ago, man. I'm going through some stuff ahead, and you did a great job. I mentioned it in my story. I can read that story later too. You did a great job on a show you emceed that Celia Cruz was the main event.
She recorded with Puente and Willie Colon and all them guys. Then she broke off and formed her own band with her husband, Pedro Knight. But she was always intertwined with the other, So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This was a show that I remember because I hadn't met you yet, but yet in the show, the late, great Walter Smith didn't want me writing anything but sports. He gave me a tremendous tribute. Don Thomas sent me down to cover a show, a Latin show, which I love to do. And Mr. Smith, he called me and says, Doc, Mr. Smith says, you can't cover anything but sports. He says, Doc Stanley is an expert at what he does. So we had to figure out another way. So what we did is, you know what we do, Don? Hey, we won't put my byline on it. We'll just use another name.
Right, so it worked out.
So I used the byline Join, J-O-I-N-D-O, Join God, and it worked. And every Monday night, Sultanese Jazz, or whatever Latin show, and you emceed this show with Celia Cruz. The next time we show, I'm going to mention it. And your impact was so profound because I didn't know you then, and I was just getting into covering the show, but I mentioned at the end of the show what a tremendous job to NC, and that's what they call you, Dusty. Because I know you're Destino, Dusty, and I remember your professionalism, the way you put the groups on, the way everybody knew you. You know, you were just as an integral part of that show as the show was itself. You know, actually, it was just you and Celia, but I just remember mentioning, I said, wow, that's Destino. You know what I mean? I said, there's more to this guy than left hooks and right hands.
No, I did a lot of shows with them. I did a lot of shows. I did a MC. Oh my God, Eddie Palmieri, Ray Barreto. I worked my way through. The only thing is that Rob McCullough would not hire me. So the hell with him. I did my independence. I got an agent who was giving me. Oh, are you kidding? I had concerts in Asbury Park. I had concerts in Lincoln Center. Concerts in the Apollo, concerts in Shea City with Joe Bataan. I mean, so really, it's everything is a cutthroat business, and that's why I couldn't get in the door with the Fania All Stars concert when they had it at the Cheetah and they recorded there, But I did a show at the Cheetah. With one of the other promoters, man, and I racked the place, man. I was the MC then, Celia and I did a lot of commercials on Spanish radio. So I honed my appetite with that. And Paquito Navarro was another guy Polito Vega, all them guys, I should hang out with, But I mean, and then co-work with them. The only deficit was Symphony Sid. He gave me a runaround because I asked him to sit, let's do you go to the Village Gate, let's do a coke gig. I said, this is a tough business. There was another guy, Art Pancho Raymond, another dude who had Latin music. I said, hey, help me, or I was starting to do MC, give me a boot. Oh, it's a tough business. I don't advise you to get in there. But, man, in the meantime, these guys are making money. And then I asked him, but he said, you know, and he threw me out the door practically, and then he developed Joe Gaines, and Joe Gaines stunk. But, you know, and that pissed me off. I said, well, you know, but the thing is, I got my taste. I did a lot of stuff, and, you know, and then, of course.
But did you any work with Ralph McCardo?
Ralph McCardo wouldn't hire me.
Okay,
he, wow. He, yeah, I said in my resume, he wouldn't hire me. Well, you know, we have this guy, Dizzy, and some other guys, and Paquito Navarro, you know, and Ralph McCullough did a lot of the emceeing himself. I said, well, the hell with him. You know, I don't need him. He goes, I'm not starving. I don't need him. But,
well, no, I just remember seeing you. I mean, your impact was because, yeah, I mentioned you in this story. And yes. I had to all the other because, by the grace of God, of course, all great things come from. Because Harriet Wadsworth, who used to be Bobby Darin's PR lady, she handled the PR. And I remember just seeing all the others and seeing you, and you just stuck out, man. I mean, then you couldn't meet the combination of you being bilingual. And
yeah.
Like you said, thank God you was a fire lieutenant, so it wasn't that you were starving, but what you brought to the table, man. And then, you know, also your attire, man. You know, you always was sharp, man. You know, even now, you know, I look at you, man. You know, when we walk into the spot, we bring an attire from a time of special attire. You know, and your shoes match with your color, your shoes,
exactly.
Your tie, a hat. Everything we wear from that time was coordinated. We adjusted to the 60s where whatever you put on was correct. You know, your blue
exactly.
jeans, all purple shirt, your green shoes, you know, with your pink hat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But even then we adjusted, but you were the best. And I just remember.
It was a good time, a good ride. Like I used to say, it was a good ride in my time, you know. And there was a lot of times that I said, well, man, why bust my chops? But then again, I mean, in fact, my biggest glory, if anything, was I was Tito Puente's MC, special MC. Dudes didn't know that. Puente mm-hmm. would not go on stage if I was around with me announcing him. And
mm-hmm.
Tito Puente and I, we grew up together, but we didn't know each other from El Barrio. He was 111th Street and 3rd Avenue. I was from 104th
mm-hmm.
Street. But it wasn't until years later that we were talking trash. One day we were having a few drinks and talking. And they said, coño, 104th. I'm from 111th. I said, coño, did we gang bang together? But the fact of the matter is that once he knew who I was, I established myself as his MC, and he wouldn't go on stage. And say, oh, get these steel to announce me. I'm up, and everywhere I went, boom, you know, I had to do, you know. Of course, he had a scholarship to Juilliard for kids, a fundraising dinner at Lincoln Library.
Mm-hmm.
And yours truly, I had to be there to announce him. You know, so I got to know the guys, but the fact of the matter is that I pushed myself, but then, you know, I realized there was, it was like a waste of time. Not a waste of time, but once, you know, Mercado was the top dude, and he hired and fired and did what he wanted to do. So, you know, and I sent him my resume, I said, hey, well, come to my office, you know, but he never called me. It never bothered. I said, the hell with it. I was doing my radio. I was doing Spanish radio, Spanish television.
No, I said, yeah, you had other avenues. I mean, they didn't see what you – that great line that I think it's Zora Neale Hurston. I got to get her name correctly, man. But she said, if they don't want my company, shame on them. They're losing out.
Yeah, right, exactly. You
losing
know,
out.
But,
you know what I mean?
Them that got it
can't hide it, and them that don't have it can't show it.
Yeah. but
that was
but
it, man.
Those,
but I just remember, like I said, man, you stood up because I mentioned you in the story. Don sent me down to do the story. We put it in the New York Beacon. It may have been the New York Red then. And I just remembered in closing out the story, talking about so forth and so on. In fact, the next time we come on, I'll have the story. I'll read it to you.
Right.
And I mentioned, you just stood out, man. And then as I looked on you, I said,
yeah.
Well, Dusty, baby. That was just, they didn't know. If they didn't get it right, you could turn out the lights on them, baby.
Yeah, but that,
Jesse,
that
tell everybody good night. Okay, Jesse, thanks. Anything else you wanted to add? It was I met him. I always thought he was Puerto Rican, and we had an in-depth talk one day, and I found he was Dominican. Juan Marichal was his favorite player. But I thank you so much, and I tell everybody here, you hear and learn things here on Sports In Depth that you never have any place else. Johnny Pacheco's parents were musicians. A lot of people thought Johnny was Puerto Rican, and like you said, he's Dominican.
Straight from DR at 11 years of age, settled in the Bronx.
Wow.
That's it. Settled in the Bronx, and he was already honed as a musician because the flute, I think, and the piano and all that, but his favorite taste was the flute. And that's how he put together his tumbao, you know, because that was the era of the charanga and the Latin bands that had violins. And he had his own, you know, the guy was, then of course he got together with another buddy of mine from El Barrio, Peter Conde Rodriguez. And Peter Conde and I grew up together. He was a 104th, I was a 104th. And we would hang out together. Anyway, so he hooked up with Peter Conde.
That was off Lexington Avenue?
What you say?
No, in the Bronx. I said the Bronx. Okay.
No. He was from the Bronx. Peter Conde and I, Pete was 105th Street between Madison and Park, and I was 104th Street between Madison and Park.
Oh,
and
really?
Really?
And, I always thought you was up in the Bronx, Dusty.
No, Bronx in my later years when Urban Renewal and we went to the projects, Gun Hill Road. But I was never Bronx. I was born in Harlem Hospital, the original Harlem Hospital.
You, Sammy Davis Jr., both, right?
Right.
Wow.
My formidable years were in Harlem. 412 Lenox Avenue, right off 128th Street. My first school was PS 28, three blocks away from the Apollo. That was my turf. My formidable years, I was 6 or 7 years of age before Mom, we moved to Spanish Harlem, El Barrio, you know, we grew up.
Okay, so Jesse, so you first, where did you first live at in Manhattan?
In Harlem, I'll tell you, 128th Street.
Okay, and then you moved downtown to of Madison.
Yeah, Mom wanted to move to the Barrio. You know, and because she spoke very little English and spoke good Spanish, and so she wanted to be.
Yeah, yeah. And going down there was like being back in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, she wanted to be back with her people.
right.
But you know what was funny? I'll tell you what was funny. Mm. When we moved to 104, I said, El Barrio, but Spanish Harlem. That freaking block alone was like a United Nations. There were Jews. There were Jews, there were Italians, there were blacks, there were Cubans. Who else was there? I'm trying to remember what. I mean, in my of course the majority were Latinos, you know. But my mother said, "Oh my God, they speak English here too." I said, "Mommy, this is a mix." That block was like a hotbed of everybody.
You remind Art Russ lived up. I remember Art Russ lived up near 141st Fifth Street, Sugar Hill, and he talked about
Sugar
how.
Hill. Oh, Sugar Hill, my Lord.
He talked about how in his area he grew up with Max Roach, Harry Belafonte. He was talking about, you know, they were counting money to go to the movies. And they was counting Harry's money, and it kept coming up short. He said, "Count against Harry. You don't care how many times we counted. You ain't got enough." You know what I mean? But he came with Harry Belafonte, Max Roach. You guys, great time. But so now, and then after down in Manhattan, you moved up into the projects in the Bronx.
Yeah, well, I was there. I was in the Barrio. Oh, shit. To 18 years of age, after I won my first Golden Glove title, And then I that same year I just won a second title, and that's when they started urban renewal of people dispersing the crowd and breaking up the people. Everybody went to this project, that project, and it's over my father because he made $5-$10 more. He was sent to a middle class project. It's a Gun Hill Road. Said, what? Where the fuck is Gun Hill Road? What the F is Gun Hill Road? This is a cowboy town. And the thing is that was the time when that movie with Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster, Last Train to Gun Hill, if you remember that movie.
Yeah.
I'm saying, wait a minute. That's what it is. And when I got on that train, the number 6 to 125th, and took the 4, the 2, it seemed like I was riding on a train for 5 days.
Wow.
I mean, what a long train ride. I said, my Lord in heaven. Finally, I see the station, Gun Hill Road. We got off and saw No Man's Land. You know, it's a paradise. Buildings.
Because the Bronx back then was still basically a lot of farm territory.
Oh, yeah. The area that we moved in was 99% Italian. You know. We were probably... the first and second Puerto Rican family in that building.
Wow.
I mean, this was all white and, you know, all mixed of white, you know, Irish, Jews, Italian, you know, and man, when I saw that 3-bedroom apartment, I said, damn, this is big class. After sleeping in a cold water room with my two brothers, and we had a share a mattress, and I said, oh shit, a railroad flat, I mean, railroad apartment, cold water flat, and this was paradise, you know, and on the 13th floor, I said, whoa, but, you know, that was the thing, but, no, Gun Hill Road was our final turf, okay, and I started in Harlem, and the thing is, the funny thing about it in Harlem is that I always remember that we always lived on the top floor.
Really?
And I said, well, I wonder why. I didn't mind. I loved it because my mom would take us over to the roof in the summertime and we would play. And instead of going downstairs, if we weren't going to the beach, we would be in the roof. You know. And then I found out that the reason why we always got top floor apartments is that if you got a third floor apartment or a fifth or not a fifth floor, a second floor or the ground floor, it was more money. So if let me tell you, if the rent on the third floor was $15, and there was such a thing of $15 a month.
Uh-huh.
My dad only paid $10 because it was the roof.
I hear you.
And I'm saying, oh, that's
so in other words, the higher up, the cheaper it was.
The cheaper it was, the higher it was. And then again, who cares? I mean, we had the roof. We had our playground in the roof. You know, the only thing that never bothered me, we used to have to run up to the sixth floor, you know, and we sat in the window with the bars. We looked out and see all the little people downstairs. And the fire escape, you can see down, you know. But we were always living on the top floor. And when we moved to El Barrio, total opposite. We found an apartment on the ground floor. I said, wait a minute. Mommy, aren't you going up? We're going upstairs. I said, no. We're going to be on the third floor. It's a culture shock. It took me a long time to get used to a freaking ground floor without having to go upstairs. You know,
wow.
No, but it was, you know, and there, shit, there at 9, 10, 11 years of age to 18, you know, that's when we moved to Gun Hill Road. And Gun Hill Road, elevator, you know, 13th floor elevator. We walked in, 3 bedrooms. I said, my God, there was so much space. We used to get lost in the freaking apartment. It was so big.
Ah.
But in fact, the Lois family, we occupied that same apartment, hold on to your hat, 78 years.
What?
That's right, 78 years. The last one who occupied that apartment was my brother Cease, who died 4 years ago. And the 78 years we had that same address, 712 East Gun Hill Road.
Wow.
This is a group. We grew up there. We went to school. We went to college. We got our degrees, our occupations, our jobs. We came in and out, in and out, and that house was steady, steady, steady. 78 years we had. I totaled up the years. I said, God be goddamn, we own this place 78 years, man. Can you imagine that? And boy, it's you know. And I haven't been back since my brother died, you know. But and when I vacated the apartment and took all the stuff out and gave it, I said, holy cow, this is the last of the Gun Hill. I'm telling you. But that was like, but that's the whole, you know, that was the whole thing, you know. Yeah,
what a great story, man. And then, you know, I learned so much, man. Wow. Because I learned something today. Doc Stanley's putting the Block Talk Radio Trust and Government Network, the Latin history of the great Justino Lois and Johnny Vachetta. I learned something, two things today. You know, I have two Russian friends, my shoemaker and my watchmaker, and they, I was telling them the origin of some words. The term, they didn't know where the term picnic came from. And I told them, I said, you know, that comes from, you know, back in the days when white people would sit around and say, let's go pick a nigga and hang him. They said, what? I said, yeah, that's where the term. I said, you know, and a lot of people don't know that. And then I told them the term raining cats and dogs because people got canopies because years ago the cats and the dogs would sleep up on the roof. And when it started raining very hard, the rain would cause them to fall through, and they said it's raining cats and dogs, and the cats and dogs would fall on the bed, and the thing was out. And Bob, who gave me this book, Dinner with DiMaggio, and the guy wrote the book, and I was blessed by the grace of God to meet Mr. Joe DiMaggio. In fact, he befriended me. I remember I was at a fight down at Atlantic City. You weren't on the scene yet, and Well, you might have been, and I got up. I was sitting next to Bert Sugar, who was a very close friend of his, and I went to talk to someone. When I came back, there was somebody sitting in my seat, and I looked. It was Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio, holy shit.
Talking chatty. Then this guy, Bob, told me something that was very flattering. Last night, the great Doc Gooden gave me a call. I hadn't talked to Doc in a while, and he told me that when he went to the I said, you know, why'd you wear number 16? He says, well, that was my number in Little League and college. You know,
oh, yeah.
I said, you know, that was Whitey Ford's number. And he said, well, yeah, I know. He said, when I went to the Yankees, Whitey Ford told me I could have number 16. And he said,
wow.
I told him, well, no, Mr. Ford, thanks so much, but, you know. And I thought it was a tremendous gesture. I said, wow. Because it had been something, too. Had he wore number 16 that day, he threw the no-hit. That was a funny story. Art Russ Jr. and I go to the game. And at about the second or third inning, Art says, you ready to go, baby? I said, Art, he hasn't given up a hit yet. So Art keeps talking. Remarkable, man. He's sitting there talking. And so at about 3 minutes later, I said, Art, you ready to go? And he just turns to me and says, you still haven't given up a hit yet, baby. And that's when we started sort of no-hitter. And he told me about that. And then this guy today, Bob, who gave me the book, where I found out that Joe DiMaggio's two biggest heroes were Lou Gehrig and Muhammad Ali. And he said, then a guy was with him. The guy wrote the book, and he started talking about Ali. And Joe said, hey. He said, hey. Ali was the best at what he said. He was just as good as me in his profession. He said, and you judge him about what he does in his venue. What he does outside is his personal business. He said, you don't.
Right.
The guy said, Joe DiMaggio and Lou Gehrig were his idols. And I found out something today, too. A guy, Bob, big Boston Red Sox fan, told me that when Gehrig passed, they made Joe DiMaggio the captain of the team, but they never publicized it. Joe DiMaggio was captain of the Yankees. So he said, you know, Gehrig was the first captain, and Joe DiMaggio was the second captain.
Second captain. Oh, man.
But they never publicized it. Yeah, Joseph Paul DiMaggio, he was very close to Gehrig. He told me a story, too, that, you know, there was a time where DiMaggio's father, the fisherman, there was a rule where they couldn't stand more than 50 feet close to the shore. You know, they had to get rid of that because he had to need to get there. And all his brothers, the late, great Bert Sugar told me, our buddy Bert, all of DiMaggio's brothers' middle name was Paul because that was their father's favorite saint. Joseph Paul. And Enos Slaughter, when he scored from first base on that hit against the Boston Red Sox in the World Series, well, Dominic DiMaggio, who has a record for the lowest amount of steals for leading the league in stolen bases, was 14,
right.
He had got hurt, and he didn't play. He was in center field. Enos Slaughter had said later that had Dominic DiMaggio been in center field, I never would have tried to score from first base. You know, tremendous. Doc Stanley Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Network. Remind me so much of SCF Radio. Dusty, thanks so much for the education.
Okay,
I'll read that
no
story
problem.
Next time. Tell everybody good night and land for us, Dusty.
Okay, buenas noches a todo el mundo, radio oyente, aquí de Sports in Depth. Que Dios lo bendiga. And I say it in English, take the vaccine, protect yourself. Let's make this a cleaner, healthier world with the new administration, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. We got these two champions here going to clean up this world, get rid of the four-year bad stench. Okay, Doc, take care.
Yeah, Dusty, thanks a lot. I like that we gave us the Latin and the English thing, and I was thinking about that too, because I mentioned today, because I heard it. It's the first time I ever heard it. No, she's the vice president, and the term they use for a husband is the first gentleman. I really like that.
Yeah, the first gentleman. That was cute.
The first
gentleman.
I mean? Thank you, Dusty.
All right. God bless, baby. Take care.
Okay. Then we'll be back. Doc Stanley Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio, Trust the Government Network. Getting ready to go. It's the end of the show. Dusty here.
Talk to you.
Dusty said, hey, the vaccine's there.
Okay.
Moments of history, that's got a great in-depth history of not only Johnny Pacheco, but just a lot of people, you know, Dusty was a fire lieutenant, too, in New York City Police Department. New York's finest, New York's first.
Fire department, not police.
Yeah. No, I said, yeah, they call you the New York's finest, and what do they call the police department? I mean, what's the nickname they use for y'all?
The bravest.
There you go. The bravest and the finest. Can't beat that. Thanks a lot, Dust.
Take care. God bless, baby. Take care.
Okay. And now, okay, there you go. Learn the bravest and the finest. We talked to one of the bravest who happens to be one of the finest. Finest had to be one of the bravest working in the New York City Transit Police Department. Outstanding Sports at Blog Talk Radio. Justin Garvin Network. Dusty was here tonight. Larry Hardy's going to tell us goodbye, and then we're going to close out for sure as we go out the door.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
Yep, with Dr. Emily Kelly Sr. and his sports posse with co-host Dusty, in-depth, informative, educational, historical look at the world of sports. This now the legendary award-winning radio show, Sports in Depth. Advice for both a daily and historical perspective, and also both an in-depth look and perspective, not only on the sports of our times, but two of the players and performers at events, both now and of yesteryear. Sports in Depth, a.k.a. SID, also brings us the unique strategy of sports from an intellectual perspective. Not just athletics, because as it takes raw God-given talent and condition, it too takes a God-blessed passion, determination, intellect, it's a competing and accomplishing tool. In-depth knowledge, first intellect, Doc's iconic force in-depth posse to the world in depth. Thanks for joining us once again, where we always broke the rumors, talked out issues, and the truth. Being at my best may be viewed by others as not being the best. Black man can help a white man win, and yet the same from him or them. Good thing is never bad. Often a bad thing knows a good thing, and yet still acts bad knowingly. Look forward to tomorrow. Be appreciative of yesterday. Be hopeful of tomorrow. But indulge in the blessing of today deeply and gratefully. All thanks to God. Are not a given. So often what you are looking for is right in front of you. Don't see, looking past it, looking for it. Not any words of wisdom and truth. Watching the Blog Talk Radio, and Trust in God Network. Thank you for being with us. Out of my heart, let's show and trust in God. Watching them, Blog Talk Radio, Trust in God Network. Trust in.
And in memory of Johnny Pacheco, got a song that has a little Latin flair to it. And at the same time, remembering Hal Jackson, the Sunday Morning Classics, two of the classics, two of the paramount pioneers of music and the positivity of New York music and society, Jimmy Castor and his group. It's a big Latin sound to it. Hey, Leroy, your mama's calling you. And we're having a problem with that again today, huh? Okay. Well, I tried the other night.
Hey, Leroy! What? Your mama, she's calling you, man.
Birthday boy, we tried to get in the other day. What the problem was? Nah. Who's away with Smokey Robinson?
Thank you.
that slide. Time of the night, you know, got the honey. The DJ, I'm mad at that. And he goes, come on, honey, it's time to go. Come on, close. I tell you, sponsored by Block Talk Radio. Justin Guy Radio Network. For being with us, a little boxing for you. Hope you enjoy the show. I tell you to say it's never too many. Mandela is coming out close. Sally, service to others.
Put your hand in mine. Oh, please be kind.
The system, most urgent question is,
let me touch your
this. Thank you, Robinson.
Let
this is not important.
Let's
close out. Talk about love in this. About that's another day. Promises tomorrow can be made.
Yeah,
one and only. Only can in some way.
Boy,
the. And ready to ride. But one more song I'll play with. Love and Pride. Earth, Wind, and Fire. Where have all the flowers gone? My favorite song by my favorite orchestral and combination singing group.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
Sports in Depth Monday. Birthday, Bobby C., Dr. J., remembering Johnny Pacheco. Sports in Depth. Talk Talk Radio. The Trust in God Radio Network. By my heart, bless you all.